let's set the table and step back for a moment and look at how FRAND disputes were historically resolved. They were effectively treated as patent infringement cases, or even if they were treated as a breach of contract case where an innovator agreed to license its essential patents on fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory terms to implementers who wanted to implement the standard, the specter of patent infringement was always lurking in the background. As a result, courts tended to limit FRAND disputes to one country. Now, there are many examples of cases where courts declined to set global FRAND rates. By our research, those cases included Microsoft v. Motorola in the Western District of Washington in 2013, the Innovatio cases in the Northern District of Illinois, also from 2013, Ericsson v. D-Link, which began in the Eastern District of Texas, went up to the Federal Circuit the year later, Optus v. Huawei, another Eastern District of Texas case from 2018. There are other cases, I'm sure. But I think relatively speaking, these were straightforward cases. A patent was found valid and infringed, and the court computed damages against the background of essentiality to the standard and FRAND commitments. That approach seemed reasonable to most people, although to be sure, there was an undercurrent of commentators at the time who argued that when parties entered into a FRAND license, they were negotiating for an entire portfolio, so it did not make sense to value patents on a country-by-country or even a patent-by-patent basis. So while you may have sampled individual patents for validity or evaluated essentiality, you were effectively addressing the value of an entire class of assets. Now, if you want to read about the history of different approaches, there are three scholars who I think really stand out in this area. One is Jorge Contreras at the University of Utah, Thomas Cotter at Minnesota, and Felix Hess, who's a professor at a German law school in Frankfurt, Germany. There are other scholars as well, and I've collected some of the papers, which I'm happy to share any citations with anyone who wants to read more about this topic here. But, you know, up until about 2017, we had a nationalized approach to resolving FRAND disputes. But in 2017, the United Kingdom High Court for Patents came along with the Unwired Planet versus Huawei decision. Now, to the surprise of many people at the time, myself included, maybe not today, but at the time, this was surprising. The High Court observed that the vast majority of CEP licenses or CEP portfolios were worldwide, and this weighed in favor of granting a worldwide remedy. Now, in this case, Unwired Planet held patents in 42 countries. Huawei had products in 58 countries. Now, a cynic like me might say that someone 58 is greater than 42, and someone's going to get a windfall when you enter a global license under those conditions. But the High Court took the view, I suppose somewhat reasonably, that it would be, in the words of the court, quote, madness to determine licenses on a country-by-country basis. Now, one part about this case that I think really set a backdrop that should not be overlooked is that there was a very real threat of injunctive relief in the Unwired Planet versus Huawei case. Injunctions, as we know, are hard to get in the United States, especially if you've made a FRAND commitment. Now, that would weigh against proving irreparable harm under the eBay factors, and when we get to the New Madison portion of today's talk, I'm going to talk about how restoring injunctive relief for CEP holders was one of the more, I think, misunderstood but important parts of the New Madison approach. But I think that was also highly relevant to some of today's global disputes. So shortly after Unwired Planet, I think a year later in 2018, we had the TCL versus Ericsson case in the Central District of California, where CDCal entered a worldwide licensing rate for TCL to license Ericsson's portfolio. Now, the reasoning there was a bit more modest. These were two global companies who made global FRAND commitments on a U.S. contract, so it was appropriate to resolve this dispute in the Central District of California. Now, in the following years, say 2018 to 2020, there were a handful of other, you know, other cases that didn't quite generate as many headlines. Most were in either Germany, France, China, or South Korea. And again, if anyone wants to learn more about these cases, happy to talk offline, pass them along. We can share about them. But yeah, I think things were humming along up until that point. You know, you had the occasional global FRAND dispute, but for the most part, these were seen as domestic disputes. So, and I don't think you know, we knew it at the time, but we reached an inflection point in 2021. In 2021, the Intellectual Property Tribunal of the Supreme People's Court in China set a global FRAND rate in a dispute between OPPO or OPPO and Sharp. It took the same approach again the following year, this year, in a case between OPPO and Nokia. Now, why was this a tipping point? Now, I think a couple reasons. One reason was that there was parallel litigation between these companies in Germany and in China. And those two countries reached dramatically different FRAND rates. If my recollection is right, I think the rate set in Germany was almost 18 times higher than the rate set by the court in China. So the parties had a strong and concrete incentive to choose different countries, different forums to litigate. The other reason that I think a lot of people don't want to talk about this, it makes them uncomfortable, but there was a strong air of protectionism in the Supreme People Court's decision. And you know, some of the factors here are listed in point four, that the reasons that the court in China justified setting a global FRAND rate over, despite there being litigation in Germany, despite the portfolio covering many different countries, was that the implementer was a Chinese company, a large Chinese company. A large percentage of the patents were from China. That would be the main source of revenue. It was the location of license negotiations. And lastly, there was property that could be used for enforcement.